On this week's show, the Year of Information Revisited.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
That's right. We're back. And you might recognize the three of us from earlier in the year when we did the Year of Information. And it's the end of the year. I figured we'd check back in and see how we did. So Ariel, thanks for joining us on the microphone again and getting ready to talk about how we did. I love looking back at our own predictions and then maybe looking ahead a little bit.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for the invitation again. And, you know, it's awesome that, you know, we did that episode at the beginning of the year. Now we get to recap and, you know, double check how it went out there.
Yeah, you know, the good thing about pontificating is we get to be wrong, and I think all of us like that. And of course, you know, if we're talking about being wrong and being open and honest about it, who else would we have but Nathan Wood?
Well, speaking of open and honest, Ari, I don't think we've chatted since the beginning of the year, which is sad, but also it feels like yesterday since we've chatted. So I'm looking forward to diving back in.
Yeah, looking forward to that as well, man.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@theconTechCrew.com to learn more. Well, listen, it is the year in review. But we want to kind of talk about some of the news, some of the things that are going on right now and where we are in the world. So, you know, we made some predictions. We'll kind of go back to those at times. You did call it the Year of Information. I know most people going into it thought it was going to be the Year of AI, but I think we threw a little bit of, I don't know, curveballs at you along the time. So it's kind of cool. We made some predictions on, you know, the first round of competitive grants, you know, getting construction technology money, et cetera. So Ariel, I'm interested, you know, in your opinion, how did the year go? First of all, do you think it went the way you were thinking when we sat down, or have you completely changed your mind now?
Well, I think I'm pretty happy with how things are going overall. I think that, you know, we're moving past from topics that we're infesting the industry, like, you know, just talking about COVID and then a lot of uncertainty. And I feel that we're finally getting back on traction into just talking construction, talking about innovation, and then how the industry is changing and, you know, what's coming next. So you see the topics more related to, I would say, data management, robotics. Some people are talking about BIM as well. And again, we're just back to construction. I like that.
Yeah, I'd be interested because we're the AI revolution is still a thing, right? And it's still really having some impact and we're seeing it, but it's not, you know, it hasn't, you know, the world hasn't completely fallen over and collapsed and it hasn't completely changed. We're not driving flying spaceships yet, you know, space cards. But so Nathan, I'm interested kind of before we dive into our news right now and compare it to where we started, what's your thoughts on the year other than it did go fast?
Man, it sure did. I think it started out very optimistic and, you know, I gotta say, I think it's sort of ending in a dumpster fire. And along the way, it's been a crazy tumble. I mean, I think, you know, I'm remembering back to the burnout days of pre-COVID when in all the frustration of just this overwork and under kind of valuing of the hard work that we do as construction technologists. And I feel like we're getting back into that state of just normalcy, which isn't necessarily a good thing. And so I think, you know, certainly AI has been a hot topic. And as much as I resist talking about it, I think it's in like two of my new segments. So it's a hot topic. And that's okay if that's where the conversation is driving, as long as we're preaching not necessarily the same hyped optimism, but preaching the reality of like what we need to do around slowing down in data and standards. So I digress, but I can say it's been an interesting, transformative year with lots of learnings, and I am optimistic for 2025.
I'm with both of you on this, and I'm actually going to give us some credit because I think we called it the year of information. I'm going to say, you know, I got to write about it, but we all three went out on a limb and said it was going to be that this year. And I actually think we were right. I think so much of this AI focus actually to the practical folks brought back data. I can't tell you how many of these talks I've been to where even the most, you know, sort of forward thinking and pushing people are relating it to, you have to have the data to feed it. You need your data. You need full data sets, not, you know, not full data sets in the respect of you can't be missing things, but in the respect of you've got to have what you want to analyze. And so I think we were right on that one, but we also had an opportunity to be wrong about a few things. So let's dive in though. Let's see what the news today is. So Ariel, what do you got? Start us off.
Yeah, I want to kick it off with a topic that's been pretty common in the past, and it's related to robotics. And we previously featured in the news section something related to TaiBot. I don't know if you guys remember, but I know it's been really, really hot. And TaiBot is pretty much this robot by Advanced Construction Robotics that's also known as the Autonomous Rebar Tying Robot. And the interesting news here is that it is now available for purchase. So with TaiBot 3.0, they're expected to provide the first deliveries in the first quarter of 2025. Because previously, this is only offered as a robotics as a service model. And you pretty much couldn't acquire the robot. Now you can, and the idea is that this is going to automate the labor-intensive task of tying the rebars in reinforced concrete structures, and that's obviously going to enhance efficiency and, of course, safety, which we all know that it's a big deal. And the latest version, the 3.0, it's also coming with some nice new features, one of them being that it comes with a 3.5 interface screen that allows you to understand data, kicking it back to what you guys were mentioning. And then you can use that information to analyze and be a little bit more proactive into your scheduling and things like that. Now, the price, it's supposed to be between $425,000 to $455,000, depending on the width of the work that you're doing. So again, you know, it's not cheap, but you can probably see that this could make sense for bridges or different projects that are, let's say, on the bigger spectrum. So hopefully, this system platform robot, it's probably, you know, used everywhere else, and we can potentially see it more practical, and we can get like real data from it on a day to day. But I think this is great news, and the fact that you know some companies are going to be able to go out there and purchase it, I think it's going to get robotics out there for more companies. What do you think about this, Jeff?
We've been following this one for a while, and I've always been impressed with the team at Advanced Construction Robotics. I mean, since the day we kind of brought them on, there's always the hype approach to things, and they really took a really, you know, they did this robotics as a service, right? So they, before they added user interface, before they went down the road of commercializing from the perspective of selling it off and just selling robots to people, they really went ahead with this, you know, service model. So they went out in the field, they were bringing their diagnostic people, and don't kid yourself, they were learning along the way. But when you're paying for a service like that, you know, the team can afford to spend time iterating and working on things. And, you know, this is just the beginning for them. I can't take credit for this. James Benham gets the credit for this one, but they are building a 3D printed, you know, a 3D bridge printer in the end, because they have the IronBot next. And you know that they're going to switch their focus now as they can commercially produce these and send them out, that they can then work on and do the same thing at the places they probably sell it to. They're probably going to give you the IronBot as a service to go along with it. And they're going to learn from that. And, you know, they're working on training. This is a focus too. We've talked a lot about this here and in some other places, just about, you know, fighting robotics and automation is a bad thing. Embracing robotics and automation is a good thing for jobs. We don't have enough people. And if you've ever worked in the concrete business, rebar tying is one of the most dangerous things you can do. I mean, if they pop, they're going through you know, body parts and, you know, you're losing fingers and et cetera. And it, you know, those things slow jobs and shut jobs down. Injuries on jobs shut them down. So I think this kind of advancement is awesome. I also just really like their approach to how they're doing it and growing it. $500,000 might sound like a lot. It's not. It works consistently. Yes, it replaces a lot of people. People we cannot find, people we cannot continue to employ. And it turns those people that we do have into operators that can operate for a lot longer. So I'm a huge fan of it, and I'm excited to see what they're going to do next. I mean, just looking through the article, the changes in the interface, the add-ons, the worker training, you know, all the things they're focused on. It's super cool. So Nathan, I'm wondering where are you landing on this one?
I mean, I love this story. It's such a slam dunk of just all the reasons why you should want to move towards innovation, move towards robotics, and to like have the data story behind it, because everything you just said about, you know, measuring the time savings of the rebar tying and the ergonomic safety, and there are just so many reasons for this. So it's great to see that they're continuing along. I mean, again, yeah, 500,000 seems like a lot, but when a lot of these, you know, high-end laser scanners are like 300,000 plus, you know, again, it's all relative. So I think it's pretty easy for them to come up with those calculations of that return on investment point. And hopefully they do come up with some sort of like, yeah, like rental model or like other different ways of financing that to make it even easier to lower that barrier to entry. But you know, great stuff coming in. But I'll keep it going around the horn here and go through mine, because I always love seeing these different startup competitions. This one is from CMEX Ventures, their construction startup competition in 2024. So there were, I think, eight different companies that made the finalist list. They did announce those winners, the gold, silver, and bronze at the Trimble Dimensions this year. So I'll just go through the top three, starting with the bronze medal was one we've talked about before on the podcast, Trunk Tools. So again, artificial intelligence platform, buzzword of the day, around, again, organizing those mountains of unstructured data, around automating workflows. So great to see that message and the kind of pitch that they're able to give in Trunk Tools was winning over that crowd. In the second place, silver medal was Raise Robotics. So again, just timely here with their robotics was really looking at autonomous high precision fastening solutions for on construction sites. So again, different ways of fastening. Again, new company that I had not heard of before. So I'm going to do more research into Raise. And then with the gold medal this year out of Austria was Sodex Innovations. So they actually do not talk about AI in their product, surprisingly, but it's I'm sure it's packed in there somewhere. But they're really focused again on installing hardware for laser scanning and different navigational system and cameras directly on construction machinery. So probably looking more at that like IoT. And again, I'm sure a lot of their analysis and things brings into AI as well. So I don't know, Jeff, if you saw any other guys on the list that you recognize or ones you wanted to highlight. But yeah, there was a lot more for me to research and learn more about in there.
Yeah, it was. I mean, just another great year of seeing, you know, groups out there that are just continuing to innovate and bringing things we didn't think about. I think the first one, your bronze medal, that just kind of, again, I like to be right. And that leads to information. I mean, I think if you look behind the curtain of what Trunk Tools is really trying to do, is they're trying to get the information we need on the job to the person and people who need it when they need it without having to run around and search for it. And understanding that, you know, the mountains of paperwork that we're doing, they equate to risk. And when you sign off and hand over a building, you or a bridge or any project, you're certifying that you built it in exact to those to that documentation. And there's just so much of it. How can you really be sure? And how much is that slowing us down, et cetera? So I think that's awesome to see. Raise Robotics is very similar to some of the other things we're talking about with really about safety. You know, safer job sites. We're seeing this more and more, and we need it. We need to automate and enhance the amount of safety and automation and robotics that we have on our sites. So it's really awesome to see. And again, the future of surveying is automated, right? very dangerous things. People don't understand that in the old days, I mean, I'll never forget this when James Benham and I first got together and I was like, what are drones really going to do? Right. And he's like, let me show you something. And there was a video of a person trying to climb a material pile with, they had a stand in their hand, and I'm going to get it wrong. What was on the top of it? It wasn't a laser scanner, but it was some sort of measuring device. And that was the tool they were trying to get to the top of the pile to shoot, to figure out how much they had. And you could see this person sliding, and, you know, I'm just like, this is so dangerous. And he's like, yeah, we fly a drone over it. We go and do. So to see just this advancement is awesome, man. I'm a big fan of it. And it's at, go back to CMEX Ventures. If you don't subscribe to Contech and Tacos, you are missing out. And just look at the people investing. Caterpillar, Disrupt Tech, which is actually an arm of Haskell. Hilti's in there. Trimble's in there. Zakua Ventures. You can't look at a big startup right now that's doing well and not see Zakua show up. So, really cool to see the institutional investors, you know, really showing up. So
I
went long winded.
No, it's fine. I was sad to see there was a little bit of snub. There was a category for green construction, because, you know, I'm always looking for green innovation stuff, but neither of those two companies, Mixed Touristing or Revitalize, did win that one. But at least they did get honorable mention. But I don't know, Ariel, what did you see in there?
Well, I think this is it's really nice. This competition, you know, it's the eighth edition. And I think the biggest thing that I take from this is that this is not only the U.S., you know, it's not only about a specific country. This is a worldwide competition. And they had over 70 countries competing. And here you're getting companies not only from the U.S., but you're getting companies from Austria, from France, from Estonia. There's so many solutions out there. And we got to the point now where, like, hey, the solutions that are coming into our industry are not specific solutions to, let's say, one tangible problem. They're thinking ahead. How can we be more efficient now? How can, you know, think about this one, Mixed Touristing, right? You're just talking about how can we measure the CO2 efficient in concrete? Like, you know, we were not even thinking about that probably 5 years ago. I mean, but now they're coming with all these sensors, and how can they do the simulations a little bit better? That's amazing, you know, and we got to the point where, let's say, in the past, you know, 10 years ago, if you wanted to talk about construction technology, you could reach to Jeff, and Jeff will be a know-it-all. Like, he will know about all the solutions, and you could think about the one person that knows about everything related to technology. Well, now it gets to the point that you need an expert in digital twins, you need an expert for data management, you need an expert for every single topic that's coming out there. You can no longer have an understanding of it all. It's all to experts for different areas. That's the way I think about it.
All right, from driving innovation to potentially halting it, Jeff, what do you got?
So yeah, we're gonna take a pivot here, and you know, it's a tough one for us, but you know, we're gonna have to talk about it, right? We talk about the news, we have to talk about difficult things. So. Mm-hmm. If you're not aware, Oracle has sued payment software company Procore over trade secrets. So released in October 28th, Oracle is claiming that one of their former employees, Mark Mariano, took thousands of trade secrets to his new job at Procore, and that enabled the company to launch a rival software platform for construction payments. If you guys don't know, Oracle owns Textura. That's where Mark came from. And, you know, they are saying, you know, that they're filing a lawsuit that this was their IP and that it was stolen. Procore has somewhat replied. They put out in their blog on the 31st of October that, you know, they're here to improve the lives of people in construction, and that they're focused on it, and they did not do this. Is that while our innovation solutions continue to make a significant impact, Oracle really recently filed a lawsuit against us alleging trade secret misappropriation with respect to one of those solutions. We believe the claims are meritless, and we intend to vigorously defend ourselves. So that's where we're at today. We don't know anything else other than that. And I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about you know, trade secrets, about, you know, where this is going, where we are in that world right now, and kind of get some of your opinions on it. So, Nathan, I'm kind of interested, you know, a lot of people are reacting real crazy when you hear this, and depending on where it lands, it could be a really big deal. It could be nothing. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I think I definitely had the shock and awe when I first saw the headlines, but I think you take a step back and, you know, Texera has been around for a long time, you know, considerable time, as really the only product in the market that could do what they could do. So like there needed to be others in the market that can do that. And, you know, again, I'm not going to speculate anything, but I do know that those that work in the Silicon Valley area are pretty smart about making sure that they don't cross those lines that shouldn't be crossed. But at the same time, if I'm an Oracle and I have a Textura and somebody leaves my company and goes to work for someone else and builds a competing product, yeah, I'm going to think that that's, you know, I'm going to do anything that I can to protect myself and do that. So it's like, this is the game that Silicon Valley plays. In fact, if you ever watched the Showtime Silicon Valley, I think this was literally the scenario that played out at the end of the show. And it turned out to be nothing. It turned out to be frivolous. And so, you know, I can only hope for the advancement of greater data sharing and greater, you know, my openness says, I hope this all goes away. But it is something that, you know, we need to be considerate of, and it is, it is something that, yeah, we shouldn't shy away from talking about. But Ariel, what do you think?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of poaching around, and you can just say there's an intense competition in our industry. That's all I can say there. And of course, you know, with competition and the challenges that we're facing with this type of lawsuits, it's all about intellectual property too. So, I mean, if you're fostering innovation and you're evolving in this market, things like this could happen. I'm not saying it happened. I'm just saying that you could be exposed to things like this.
Well, and so I kind of want to bring it to a little bit farther too here, is that like in the past, it's been people, right? We're poaching people, and, you know, there's lines there. Like, you know, the world, payments have been around forever, right? You know, it's not like that's an owned system, and that payment processing in general and the ways that it goes about, that any of the people in this group invented that. But of course there are certain parts of it that can be, you know, proprietary and stolen, but I'm thinking we're heading into a world too, where those secrets could be lost other ways. You know, this is an interesting time for, the theft of IP through things like AI, through reverse engineering, through, reading and samples of codes places, and then that code being replicated through a ChatGPT and not even knowing that you're doing it. So it's an important time to be kind of focused on it. And you know, I'll be honest, I am going to say something that's probably a little bit controversial, but I wish most of them would put their swords down, and I understand you have to protect your things. So no offense to Oracle. I know if you're defending yourself, you got to defend yourself, but I wish more time was spent with those three, the big three, in my opinion, Autodesk, Procore, and Oracle. I'll add in Trimble. So yeah. I'll give you one there too, Trimble. None of you are going to solve the problems that exist in this industry, because no one group can solve them, because the more and more I see this, the greater and greater it is, the more diverse it is. And we need for y'all to work together to open your platforms and integrate your platforms, take your place into your areas of expertise, and join reluctantly, but join. And y'all have some people to look at for this. This is an iPhone. Nathan, we've been talking about this, the most open operating system to ever have been invented, in my opinion. Because Microsoft's on here, Oracle's on here, and every other at Meta's on here, Google's on here. And you know what? I can buy Google services. I can buy things from Facebook through my Apple Pay, through those areas. And I think if we open these things up more, we got a chance for less of these problems and more of greater integration and greater adoption, which is truly what we need. So in my opinion, that's sort of my word of wisdom as we walk away from this one.
Preach.
Get ready for some heat from the Android fans, just so you know.
Yeah. Wait, did you say Apple's more open than Android?
That's what he said. Yeah. So
yeah, get ready for that. That is a bold statement, my friend. Well, as a complete Apple person.
it is more it's more ubiquitous, and it's open comes with gates, but gates come with trust. Trust comes with adoption. And who has the biggest market?
In the U.S. In the U.S.
Yeah, I was going to say in the U.S.
All right. No, I think what matters here is that, again, we do want platforms that are talking to each other, right? And making sure that there's more interactions as opposed to thinking as a closed environment. I think that we're done with the closed environment approach, which it was great, but now we want more freedom to choose and do the work the way we want to. I don't know. That's the way I will take it. What do you think about that, Nathan?
I think that's absolutely where you have to take it. there's no other option, I feel like. But no.
This news, that was a lot of heat, and I'm glad that Jeff took that one, because I'm definitely going to take it to the positive side and just continue on this. Yeah. But Document Crunch securing 21.5 million to continue revolutionizing construction compliance. So as you know, Document Crunch is an AI-powered – I said I was not going to say AI, but I mean, I don't think there's another way I can describe Document Crunch, but – it's an AI-powered document compliance platform. And like I said, they raised $21.5 million in a Series B funding led by Titanium Ventures, with contributions from companies like Nemetschek Group and major construction firms like Andres Construction and Saddlefields and Pontikis. So the idea here is that they're going to use this money to obviously tackle all those billions that we lose due to hidden risk in contracts and poor compliance during project execution. Their CEO, Josh Levi, emphasized that the platform is transforming and hopefully, moving forward to diving deeper into project workflows to address the root cause of risk and empower project teams like never before. And, talking about having that support, like I said, Nemetschek, and the system already integrates with the likes of Procore. And they also have partners like Trimble. So I think this is going to be a really interesting couple next steps moving forward with this money. What do you guys think about this? Starting with you, Nathan.
I love Document Crunch. I think they're kind of the go-to AI example of, this AI darling of, what a great use case for how often we don't see risks and things that present in contracts and just sign away. And, it's not until 6-12 months down the road that we're realizing the mistake that we made. So it's such a just easy sell on why you should justify, whatever cost to do this. And now, the reality is, how well does it actually do the job that it tells you, that it's telling you that it's going to do? And that, I think, is where Document Crunch, I think, actually has been. Like, I think they've gone through this trough of disillusionment that we'll talk about in a second here, and are on their way towards a really highly productive tool, but have done a really good job press and getting themselves out there on, Procore Groundbreak examples on their keynote stage and things like that. So they've just done all the right things at the right time, and kudos to them.
The moment you get a contract, you just want to sign it, right? You just want to make sure you get that. So
careful.
You got to be careful.
Well, you do have to be careful. And I think that is the story for me. I mean, I've known the Document Crunch team since the beginning, and big fan of Josh Levy's and the team there, and really the company that he's building. You know, at its core is a company that's really focused on a set of problems, and they've stayed focused on that core set of problems. I think some of the interesting things there is that you see Zakua again in there, Navitas Capital. You see some others getting involved that, we see in other places. So again, it's a purpose-built solution around a significant problem, because the number of people doing what you said, Ariel, and signing contracts because they want to get the work, or because, listen, I mean, it is hard to have enough people on staff for small companies to really even go through those contracts. So it's really democratizing that. But what I think's interesting too is if you follow them for the year and where they're headed, there's this opportunity for integrating what they do into other platforms. And I love that they're, looking at some of the other ones, but I'll use Procore as the example here, is that, the ability to know what a contract says you can do in a situation is one thing, but actually automating some of the process. Let's say you're in a rain delay and you need to alert and send an email. All of that task is a pain. And the fact that a product like theirs could tell a product like Procore, hey, here's the options. What are you going to choose? We're going to choose that we need to let them know. It's going to help us write the email. We can read over it quickly, add the things we want to add, send it off and be done and go back to what we're doing. That's a beautiful. And I think that's what a lot of the surrounding products need to start to do with all the platforms. You know, you talk about an issue in ACC, Ariel, you know, if an issue in ACC and an RFI could pop itself up, that's pre-populated with, hey, we've had these issues in the past. What do we do? You know, or, you know, open it up inside of their own platform and let somebody know outside. These are all really powerful things that can be done. So, and I'm also just super happy to see that the VCs are getting back involved. And, you know, I feel like maybe with interest rates where they are and a couple other things, we're going to see, you know, not the looseness that we saw before, which I don't think was a good thing. We're going to see solid investments in growth because we need to invest to continue to grow. So good stuff, man. I really dig it. And I like to see what, you know, the crunchers have, and I'll be interested to see next year what comes up. Nate, what do you got?
Yeah, man. I want to take us outside of just construction tech into just general tech. You probably heard me talk before about the Gartner hype cycle. And again, Gartner does research every year. Every July, they come out with a new a hype cycle that marks the different you know, innovation triggers. And then those that are in that peak of inflated expectation, which again, spoiler alert, generative AI and AI augmented software engineering both fall into that peak because it's inevitably from all that marketing and hype that is inflated higher than what the actual technology can do, it will fall into that trough of disillusionment. And that's really where you learn and you iterate and you get better until you hit that slope of enlightenment and then ultimately reach that plateau of productivity, like the iPhone of, again, like what was life like before we had smartphones? And anything that's hit that plateau of productivity falls into that. So, you know, I think it's always interesting to look at what are those trends this year. Again, AI is obviously a huge push, even, you know, especially autonomous AI, the ability to, again, ask questions and get responses back. This whole ChatGPT hype is, again, a specific version of AI that's really, I think, accelerating this year. Another one is around the boosting developer productivity, which I've always kind of associated with AI, but yeah, like the ability to actually produce code and write code faster is sort of a really big one. And then like new terms that are like way early on, like I was reading one here, digital twin of a customer. I'm like, okay, what the heck is a digital twin of a customer? But you guys may see some other things in there as you're looking through it. But the one that I wanted to highlight, because you did mention document crunch, is that if I couldn't find one for 2024, but I did find a hype cycle specifically for artificial intelligence in 2023. And some of the one different forms of it that they talked about, one being computer vision was sort of the most advanced along what I would consider like the new metrics or the what used to be smart vid is a great example of AI that's very, very mature versus like I think cloud AI services would be the definition that's probably closest associated with what document crunch does. But there's just so many different types of AI and just like trying to unpack that. I mean, I don't know, Jeff, like, are you learning stuff? Is this stuff you can help educate me and us and the audience? Where are we at here?
I will be honest. I'm, you know, it's interesting to see that generative AI is diving into the trough of disillusionment. My thought there is it got to the hype top fast, real fast. It's going to go through the bottom real quick. We actually seen a drop for the first time since it's been out in a year and a half, 2 years now, of adoption of use at work. That has a lot more to do with fears around using these tools at work and the legality of using them and, you know, corporations catching up with corporate internal policies, et cetera. But there's quite a few of them that I don't even know the first thing about. So, but you know, what's interesting is I was prompt engineering is behind it. And I'm really kind of interested that prompt engineering, from my perspective, I thought would have been ahead of it, but it's behind it. So, well, and you know, one thing, there's many things.
One thing I didn't explain that I should, if you do go on and look at this, is that there's a little legend there that for each of them are a different color that represents how many years do they project it'll be before they reach that plateau of productivity. Because again, like you can use cell phones, for example, you know, you can go back to the 80s to when they really became truly ubiquitous in what, like late 2000s, early 2010s. And that's a really long time. Whereas some of these things like generative AI, they're saying, you know, 2 to 5 years to go from at the peak of inflated expectations all the way through that trough to the plateau in you know, 2 to 5 years. So it's just, it's crazy how fast some of these things are moving through it. But Ariel, what'd you glean out of this?
I think that, you know, not a lot of people talk about this graph, but I think that everybody should at least glance at it, take a glance and kind of like explore it, even if it's just for a little bit. It's a nice way to know about technology that they're probably not thinking about, but somebody has it on their radar. And again, you still go back to your day-to-day work, but it's important to keep in mind, you know, like you said, you know, something like digital twin of a customer, what that means. So that later on when you hear it again, you have an idea and you kind of like understand, is this something that could potentially help me out? But you'll find stuff like 6G there. I mean, we're still talking about 5G and, you know, we haven't hit that, right? So why are we even talking about 6G? Well, maybe, you know, that's something that you could potentially explore, read a little bit. And again, maybe it's not here for the next 10 years, but you know, it's not going to hurt you to have a little bit of knowledge about it. I'm not saying just dive into it, but I love this this graph, and you know, it also gets you to understand where the expectations are, and also kind of like control yourself a little bit into these topics, because you know, sometimes you go into a conference and all you'll hear about is topics that are the expectations are super high, and you know, they're still like 10 years away. So.
Right. Yeah. It's like, what are the factors that hype it up versus what are the things that tamper it down and all the way through? So yeah, it's interesting. But all right, Jeffrey, bring us home.
Well, before I bring us home, there's something interesting in there that I wanted to call out, which I wish would go through the cycle faster, but disinformation security.
Ooh.
I thought that was an interesting one that's they've called out in there is, you know, the amount of disinformation that can now be disseminated through the different platforms we have and can be deep faked as well as it can be faked is pretty scary. And I want to urge everyone to really take a step back. I don't care which side you're on and where you land. Understand that it is really easy to fake things and to create disinformation and spread disinformation. And it's a falsity that everyone is spreading disinformation. It's actually, when you look at it, it's a smaller group. It's actually a very limited number of percentage-wise people that are spreading this disinformation, but it's catching fire because of the way algorithms and people work. So
Jeff, I want to
say, I want to say something.
We said this was going to be the year of information. We never said it was going to be good information.
Yeah, the year of disinformation.
Yeah,
that might be the title.
You know, everybody's putting stuff out there, and the fact that we're running into AI, it's like putting way more information out there that we were probably putting out. Our output is probably double or triple compared to a couple of years ago. So there's a lot more information, not necessarily good though, but there's a lot of information out there.
I like that. There's a lot of information out there. It's just not all true, unfortunately, which is you know, part of the problem, right? I mean, no joke. It's part of the problem. And which is what's interesting. I'm going to bring it up because, again, I guess you guys are leaving me with all the tough ones here. But my last article that we're going to end with, I actually chose it more. It's super relevant, but it's also where I kind of got the idea for the year of information was from my friends at TechBrew. You can go to emergingtechbrew.com. It's an awesome spot to hear what's coming out in tech. Their daily newsletter, they're part of Morning Brew. Love it. It's what a second Trump term could mean for regulation of AI. You know, we are at the point, Trump is our next president, and he's going to be appointing people. And I think it is really an interesting, obviously, time given a shift in what are we going to, you know, AI is new and it's been at the center of conversation, but it's also, you know, at the center of the time that we need to have ethical thought around it. And what is this really going to mean? You know, classically Republicans are more business, you know, and, competition forward, and you know, Democrats are a little bit more government and controls, although that didn't play out in the social media world. And so what's going to play out in the AI world? And you know, are we going to see changes? But to me, this is the interesting part, how no matter how you feel about it, is the wild card in this one is having Elon Musk this close to what's going on. He has been on record as saying there's a 10 to 20% chance that AI goes bad, even while he's raising billions of dollars for his own AI. You know, and if you remember, he was on the original, he was one of the original founders of OpenAI. He left over some disagreements on what OpenAI was supposed to be as it got its investments and started to move towards monetization and becoming more business focused. So it's a really unique time on what's going to happen with it. And so I just kind of wanted to put it out there. What does it really mean? And any thoughts on, you know, what it means?
I mean, I guess I'll start. It makes me think about the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. And there's been some news in the past, I forget, some expose stuff on some funky stuff that can go on in there. And again, like any commercial or anything where like there's, you know, that fine print or like the things that you have to say, like, you know, those are all things that are commissions that, again, I have to assume are on the firing line of all these different agencies that create more waste than they do value. And you know, to a certain extent, you know, there could be some argument for that. But again, you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater either. So I hope it's, well, yeah, I hope it's not as disruptive, but yet we advocate for disruption. So I don't know. I don't know where I stand in all this. Ariel, where are you at?
Well, you know, I just want to say that it's important to highlight that there's like this fine line between fostering innovation and implementing responsible AI regulation. So we could talk about that. This could be something that where you're saying, hey, we want to open something to like a voluntary compliance from the tech companies. But at the same time, that can raise questions about accountability and then enforcement as well. So if we don't have clear standards or oversight, we're risking leaving some gaps that can be exploited. And this is going to become more present in different industries just like ours, like the construction industry, where safety and also compliance are key of a good project, right? So I think it's a pivotal moment in which we just need to think on how we want to align our technological advancements also with like ethical and then also practical governance. So again, it's going to be tricky. It's going to be a difficult task. And whatever we decide in the next couple of years, it's going to have a big impact on whatever happens with AI and how these technologies interact with us.
It really is. And it might be a good, and I've sat with quite a few people and had conversations about the need for ethics to be built in, the need for oversight to be built in. And, you know, I listen a lot and, you know, I'll give, Jake Olson a shout out. We recently were at SMACNA and we had a long discussion. In fact, Christy Palutic got to sit through it. So, and hear how passionate I can get about certain things. And, but again, I can be talked to about it. And that's something that, you know, Jake brought up is that we need these innovations and this is an arms race in some respects around the technology itself. And, you know, he kind of was advocating for not what we saw in social media, but, you know, more of, you know, we let the social media folks off the hook completely. And I think that's the failure in the regulation is that we let them off the hook, not that we went in and didn't do something. So I think in this respect, We're not going to let them off the hook to be ethical and to that they can't be held responsible for negative outcomes of what they build, but also that we need to lean in and be a part of it and use it. We're going to need it. I mean, in all honesty, you know, I'll make a joke about the whole Doge thing or whatever, however we want to pronounce it in the future.
The department of government.
It's funny. Every time I say that, people are like, oh, the coin. I'm like, no, not the coin. Yeah,
right. Department of Government Efficiency.
We can laugh about
Elon's
it.
Elon's Doge.
It's kind of
funny.
Can
we call it Dojo?
But, yeah, right. But in many areas, like the process that happens in government that is mundane, repeatable, and manual, that's causing other things to be slowed down, is huge. If you think we have it in construction, government has it in spades, and it affects our lives on a daily basis in ways we don't think about. And so this is an opportunity for some of those areas to really create efficiencies through automation. I'm not saying AI. I'm saying through automation, through advanced technology tools that are secured, because if they can be secured for that factor, then they can be used in other areas as well. So I think it's a cool proving ground for it. And yes, to Jake, if he's listening, I'm backing off a little bit. And maybe someday I'll back all the way off. We'll see. Before we let us go though, I'm going to hop off my soapbox here. And before we go, any predictions from the two of you for 2025, what you think might be ahead in store, et cetera?
I want to say the word coalescing. Is coalescing a word? Like, I feel like there is this realization that, we do need to slow down a little bit, that this year has been very fast. And I'm hoping that we can find some reason to, I mean, last time it was COVID that kind of forced us to slow down. But we're going to have to come up with a reason to, because it's the whole idea with innovations, you got to go slow to go fast, right? And so I'm hoping that in 2025, we will come up with the right reasons to pause, go slow, and then go really fast after that.
Ariel, I'm interested. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are the total opposite. I think that, I think we're going to go faster. And the reason I say that is because, yes, we're going to go slow, let's say, in the higher end. But there's a lot of companies that they are not necessarily leveraging things like the cloud. And I think that tech stack, it's well developed already. So I can see more companies getting super comfortable doing a digital bid. I can see companies that are transitioning into, let's say, doing a pool planning session online. And we're going to get more and more people into this trend where they want to adopt more technology faster because they can see the benefits. Again, this doesn't include, I'm not talking about robotics. I'm not necessarily talking about AI per se, but I think we have a lot of technologies out there that people are just they're going to go to buy one and they're going to get the whole set. They're going to get like a whole package of tools because eventually they start seeing the benefits.
I Jeffrey, are you Goldilocks? We got slow and we got fast. What are you going to be?
Can't say both.
No. Well, I can't say both. No, you're,
if you explain it, you can.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think next year is really going to be a year in which, you know, we had the year of information is what we called it last year. We've had this insane advancement in the technology itself in the last 12 months. And we're actually seeing, I mean, if you look at ChatGPT and some of the others with their ability to sort of learn and train on their own, I don't like to use the word learn because it's a human thing, but they're training themselves as a model and getting better and better. I think we're going to see that across industry. I think we're going to find more and more pockets where we can use these tools to advance the industry itself in construction. But I think in general, advance our industries, pass through and break through some of the barriers that we've had previously, because, you know, we've been gathering data, but what has it really been doing for us? Not a lot in a lot of respects, because you've had to be doing reporting and analytics and have teams. And now you're going to be able to do things faster for smaller groups in really specific areas. But honestly, from a construction perspective, I think next year is honestly a year that we see us taking a role and growing for the first time from a labor perspective, bringing new people in. I think the economic factors, the trends that we've seen in the past, and then this new administration and where it's going to focus, I think you're going to see a push back into an entrepreneurial spirit of people joining our industry and seeing the potential. On an interesting side, I'm just going to leave out there that I think it's no secret that we're seeing a lot of private equity come in and buy up both mechanical, electrical, a lot of our trade contractors across the board. However you feel about that, a lot of that points to an opportunity in those businesses to use established techniques to get more efficient. That's what, you know, a lot of these private equity firms are looking for, right? Come into a group that's, you know, making top line money, but not making bottom line revenue increases. And you can come in and you can, you know, make efficiencies and grow that bottom line. It's an opportunity there. So you can either be bought and have that opportunity, or you can do it yourself. And I think a lot of these tools that are about to hit their stride could do that. So that's sort of my prediction for next year. We'll see how we do, right?
Well said. It's going to become an easy.
Well,
get ready to get the name of the year for the next episode.
Yeah, we'll have to think about the name of the year.
The year of labor. Maybe it is the year of labor.
The year of the labor of love, right? All I know is this. I'm still going to have you two to sit down and talk to, and I'm excited for that we get to continue to have these conversations for one more year. So with that, I'm excited.
Yeah, we appreciate you, Jeff, all the hard work you put in.
Thank you for everything.
Thanks to everybody listening in, and thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our year in review. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontentcrew.com. This is The Content Crew, signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.